Hey there, deep dive listeners. Ever feel like you're drowning in legal jargon, especially prepping for an exam?
Yeah, it can be overwhelming wading through all that dense text.
Exactly. So today, we're doing the heavy lifting for you. We're cutting straight to the core, pulling out the absolute must-know insights.
And this one's specifically tailored for you, the learner. Anyone aiming to really grasp the essentials of penal code offenses related to sex crimes, you know, for that exam.
Right. Think of this as your strategic shortcut. We want you to walk away not just having memorized terms, but actually understanding the logic behind them.
That's the goal, getting that aha moment that makes it stick. Because understanding why the law is written the way it is, well, that's the key for applying it correctly.
Our source material today, it's solid. Excerpts from Penal Code 8.4, Crimes Against Persons, Sex Offenses.
Mm-hmm. The same stuff used in a basic peace officer course. So this isn't just abstract theory.
Nope. This is foundational knowledge. The bedrock for understanding the legal landscape of these really serious offenses.
So our mission today, basically, is to unpack it all methodically. We're talking key definitions, specific crimes, those crucial distinctions like consent or age.
The different felony degrees, defenses, enhancements, all of it. We want to make it crystal clear for your exam prep.
But like you said, it's more than just memorization. It's about seeing how the pieces fit together, the logic and the application. That's what really counts.
All right, let's dive in. First things first, definitions. In this area of law, the exact wording is everything.
Absolutely critical. And sometimes the meaning of a term can actually shift slightly depending on which part of the code you're in.
Which is definitely something you need to watch out for on an exam. So let's build a quick mental map for the foundational terms.
Okay. Think of it like a spectrum. On one end, you've got sexual intercourse, which is super specific.
Right.
Then broadening out a bit, there's deviate sexual intercourse. Its definition can vary, which we'll get into.
Okay.
And then the widest umbrella term is sexual contact. This covers intentional touching, but not penetration.
Got it. Specific, variable, and broad. Let's start with the variable one. Deviate sexual intercourse. Our sources point out two definitions. What's the difference?
Good question. So Penal Code 25.02 defines it as any contact between the genitals of one person and the mouth or anus of another with intent to arouse or gratify sexual desire.
Okay, so that intent part is key in that definition.
Exactly. It's about the purpose behind the contact. But then you look at Penal Code 21.01.
And it's different.
It's broader, yeah. It defines it as either one, any contact between any part of the genitals of one person and the mouth or anus of another.
Any part.
Or two, the penetration of the genitals or anus of another person with an object.
Ah, so it explicitly includes object penetration. Mm-hmm. And what about the intent element?
That's the crucial difference for you to note. The 21.01 definition itself doesn't include that intent to arouse or gratify element for deviate sexual intercourse.
Huh. So the same term has different requirements depending on the section. That's a definite exam trap.
It really is. Always check the specific section you're dealing with. The intent element is vital for other definitions like sexual contact, but not this specific 21.01 definition of deviate sexual intercourse.
Okay, good flag. Now, what about plain sexual intercourse? You said that one's super specific.
Extremely specific. Both 25.02 and 21.01 define it the same way. Any penetration of the female sex organ by the male sex organ.
That's it. Just male-female genital penetration.
That's it. Very narrow, biologically defined. Keep that limited scope in mind.
Right. And the last one, sexual contact. The broad umbrella.
Right. Defined in 21.01, and it's also relevant for the indecency with a child section. 21.11. It means any touching of the anus, breast, or any part of the genitals of another person.
Okay.
With intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of anyone.
See, the intent is back for this one.
So it's touching specific sensitive areas, non-penetrative, but the intent has to be there. Precisely. It covers a much wider range of actions than the other two, but that sexual intent is the key element. For your exam, I think of it as the go-to term for intentional, non-penetrative, sexually motivated touching of those specific areas.
Got it. Sexual intercourse, narrow. Deviate sexual intercourse, variable, check the section. Sexual contact, broad touching plus intent, good foundation.
Okay, so now we have the basic building blocks.
Let's use them. Moving from definitions to specific prohibited conduct. First up, offenses tied to family relationships. Penal Code 25.02, prohibited sexual conduct.
Right, this section deals directly with incest. It forbids sexual intercourse or deviate sexual intercourse between people who have specific familial relationships.
What are the core elements here?
Two main things. First, the act itself, either sexual or deviate sexual intercourse. Second, the actor knows the other person falls into one of the prohibited relationship categories.
And does it matter if the relationship is by blood or adoption?
Nope. The law explicitly states, without regard to legitimacy. So adoption counts just the same as blood relation. That's an important detail for you to remember.
Okay. And the law lists out exactly which relationships are prohibited, right?
Very meticulously. It covers the obvious ones, like direct ancestors and descendants, parents, children, grandparents, grandkids.
By blood or adoption.
Correct. It also includes current or even former stepchildren or stepparents. So the prohibition can stick even if the marriage that created the step relationship ends.
Interesting. What else?
It extends out to close relatives, like an aunt or uncle, a brother or sister, whether full blood, half blood, or adopted.
Okay.
And then one step further, children of the actor's siblings, so nieces and nephews, by blood or adoption, and even children of the actor's aunt or uncle, so first cousins, blood or adoption. There are six specific categories listed in the code.
So it casts a pretty wide net within families.
It does. The focus is on preventing sexual relations within those defined familial bonds.
And how does the law treat the severity? Are all these relationships punished the same way?
No, there's a distinction based on how close the relationship is. Most of them, step relations, aunts, uncles, siblings, niece, nephews, first cousins, fall under subsection A2 through 6. Committing the act with someone in those categories is generally a felony of the third degree.
Okay. A third degree felony. But you said most of them.
Right. There's one exception, subsection A. If the prohibited relationship is with an ancestor or descendant, that direct line, parent-child, grandparent-grandchild, it's elevated.
Not much higher.
It becomes a felony of the second degree.
Ah, so the law sees violating that direct lineage as significantly more serious. That makes sense. Good distinction to note for an exam.
Definitely. The degree of relation directly impacts the severity of the charge.
All right, let's shift now to offenses against adult victims, moving beyond family ties. First up, indecent assault, Penal Code 22.012.
Okay, indecent assault. This covers certain types of non-consensual sexual misconduct that don't involve penetration. The key elements are that the act must be done without consent and with the intent to arouse or gratify sexual desire. Both have to be there.
And what kind of conduct falls under this?
There are four main types listed. Broadly, think about it as 1, non-consensual touching of intimate areas, anus, breast, genitals.
Okay.
2, touching someone with your own intimate areas.
Right.
3, exposing or trying to expose someone else's intimate areas.
Like flashing, basically.
Yeah, or attempting it. And 4, this one's a bit broader, causing someone to contact specific bodily fluids. We're talking blood, seminal fluid, vaginal fluid, saliva, urine, or feces.
Wow. Okay, so it covers quite a range beyond just touching. Mm. What are the penalties normally?
The default is a Class A misdemeanor.
But I'm guessing there are ways it can become more serious. Enhancements.
Absolutely. It jumps up to a state jail felony if the person has a previous conviction for indecent assault.
Okay, prior conviction bumps it up.
Oh, right. Or, interestingly, if the offender is a health or mental health services provider and the act happened during treatment and was, you know, outside the bounds of legitimate care.
So exploiting that professional position.
Exactly. And it can even go higher to a third degree felony if that health provider already had a previous conviction specifically as a provider under this section.
So repeat offenses by providers are treated very seriously.
Very. And one more thing, the code says this is a stackable offense. That means prosecutors can charge someone under this law, another law, or both, depending on the circumstances. Gives them flexibility.
Okay, good to know. Now let's move up in severity to sexual assault, Penal Code 22.011. Our source material makes a really important point here, framing this as an act of violence and power, not just sexual desire.
Yes, and that's a fundamental concept for anyone in law enforcement, especially as someone studying for the exam, to really internalize. The law recognizes sexual assault primarily as a violation of autonomy, an assertion of power and control over another person.
Not primarily about sexual gratification.
Correct. The means used, force, threats, drugs, exploiting incapacity, are about overpowering the victim's will. Understanding this helps officers approach victims with the right mindset, recognizing the trauma isn't just physical.
That perspective is crucial. So legally, what are the core elements of sexual assault?
Okay. The baseline is the actor must act intentionally or knowingly, and the act must be without the consent of the other person.
Intentionally or knowingly and without consent. Got it. And what kinds of acts constitute the assault?
The law specifies three main types of penetration. One, penetration of the anus or sexual organ of another person by any means. Doesn't have to be a body part.
Any means, okay.
Two, penetration of the mouth of another person by the actor's sexual organ.
Right.
Three, causing the sexual organ of another person to contact or penetrate the mouth, anus, or sexual organ of another person, which could include the actor themselves.
So it covers a range of penetrative acts and the penalty level.
Generally, sexual assault is a second-degree felony.
Generally. Is there an enhancement here, too?
Yes. It gets bumped up to a first-degree felony if the victim is someone the actor was legally prohibited from marrying, like under bigamy laws, or someone they were prohibited from having sexual relations with under that prohibited sexual conduct section we just talked about, section 25.02.
So if the assault happens within an already prohibited relationship, the penalty is higher.
Exactly. It adds another layer of severity to the offense.
Okay, now here's a really critical part, especially for anyone studying this. Defining without consent. Our source lists 14 different scenarios. That seems extensive.
It is incredibly extensive, and for good reason. It reflects a deep legal understanding that lack of consent isn't just about saying no or fighting back physically.
So what's the big takeaway from having so many definitions? What's the core idea the law is getting at?
The core idea is safeguarding a person's full ability to choose their agency and their capacity to consent freely and knowingly. These 14 points aren't just a checklist. They show the many ways consent can be absent or invalid. Think physical force, mental impairment, abuse of power. It covers a lot of ground.
Can you give us some examples? Maybe group them. That might help make sense of the 14 points.
Sure. We can think of them in maybe three broad categories. First, there's compulsion through force or threats.
The most obvious kind.
Right. Physical force, violence, or coercion. But also, importantly, threats of force or violence, either against the victim or someone else, if the victim reasonably believes the actor can carry it out. Fear is a key factor.
Okay. Force and threats. What's the next category?
Second category is victim incapacity or unawareness. This is where the victim is, say, unconscious or physically unable to resist.
Big sense.
It also includes situations where, due to a mental disease or defect, the victim just can't understand the nature of the act or resist it. And crucially, it covers when the actor intentionally impairs the victim's judgment, like using a date rape drug without their knowledge.
So drugging someone falls squarely in here.
Absolutely. And even if the victim is simply unaware that the sexual assault is happening.
Okay, that's incapacity and unawareness. What's the third group? This must cover the power dynamics.
Exactly. The third category is abuse of power or trust. This is where the law really digs into relationships where there is an imbalance.
Like
a public servant using their position to coerce someone. Or a health or mental health provider exploiting the emotional dependency of a patient, even a former patient.
Wow, former patient too.
Yes. Also, clergy members exploiting their role as spiritual advisors, employees of facilities where the victim lives, unless they're married, even coaches, tutors, or caregivers exploiting the dependency of someone who relies on them.
That's incredibly broad. It really paints a picture of protecting vulnerable people in many different situations.
It does. It shows the law takes violations of trust very seriously, not just physical overpowering. For your exam, knowing the breadth of without consent beyond just physical resistance is absolutely key. The full list is in the show notes.
Definitely worth reviewing those 14 points carefully. And within sexual assault, the law also defines some specific terms, like spouse and the types of providers.
Right, just for clarity, spouse means legally married. Healthcare services provider and mental health services provider include long lists of licensed professionals, doctors, nurses, therapists, social workers, counselors, even clergy. It emphasizes the professional responsibility.
Okay. And employee of a facility.
That refers to people working at places like nursing homes or residential treatment centers, basically anyone paid to provide services where the victim resides.
Got it. So, building on sexual assault, we get to aggravated sexual assault, Penal Code 22.021. The name implies it's even more serious.
It is. Think of it this way. Aggravated sexual assault is a sexual assault, but with specific additional factors, aggravating factors that make it significantly worse in the eyes of the law.
So it's sexual assault plus something else. What are those plus factors?
Several things can elevate it. For instance, if the actor causes serious bodily injury or attempts to cause the death of a victim or someone else during the assault.
Okay, serious harm or attempted murder.
Right. Or if the actor places the victim in fear of imminent death, serious injury, kidnapping, or other severe offenses, or even just threatens those things in the victim's presence.
So extreme fear or threats count.
Yes. Also, using or exhibiting a deadly weapon during the assault or the criminal episode.
Weapon use, definitely aggravating.
Acting in concert with another person against the same victim. Gang assaults, essentially. Or administering a substance to impair the victim. But here, it requires the specific intent to facilitate the assault.
So drugging with the intent to assault makes it aggravated.
Correct. And then there's a whole other category based on the victim's characteristics.
What's that?
If the sexual assault is committed against an elderly individual or a disabled individual, it automatically becomes aggravated sexual assault, even without those other factors.
Ah, so the victim's vulnerability itself is an aggravating factor.
Exactly. The law provides heightened protection for these groups.
And the penalty for aggravated sexual assault.
It's always a first-degree felony, the most serious category below capital murder.
Okay. And how are those terms defined here? Child, elderly, disabled.
For this section, child still means younger than 17. Elderly individual and disabled individual generally follow definitions used elsewhere for protecting vulnerable populations. Specifically for aggravated sexual assault, a disabled individual is someone older than 13 who, because of age or condition, can't really protect themselves or provide their own basic care.
Got it. That clarifies the adult victim offenses. Now let's transition to offenses involving child victims. This is where the law often imposes even stricter standards and harsher penalties.
Absolutely. The law recognizes the inherent vulnerability of children and their inability to legally consent in the same way adults might. The focus shifts dramatically.
Let's start with indecency with a child, Penal Code 21.11.
Okay. Indecency is committed with a child younger than 17. And here's a critical point that applies across basically all these child victim offenses, something definitely for you to remember. The offense occurs regardless of whether the actor knows the child's actual age.
So I thought they were older. Is not a defense.
Not a defense. Ignorance of age doesn't excuse the conduct. For indecency itself, there are two main ways it happens. One, the actor engages in sexual contact with the child or causes the child to engage in sexual contact.
Okay, sexual contact.
Two, or the actor, with intent to arouse or gratify sexual desire, exposes their own intimate areas knowing a child is present or causes the child to expose their intimate areas.
So contact or exposure with intent. And right. We need to revisit sexual contact for this section, right? There was a specific detail.
Yes, good catch. Section 21.11C defines sexual contact for indecency with a child. It means any touching of the anus, breast, or genitals of a child, or touching any part of the child's body with the actor's intimate areas. And here's the key part, including through clothing.
Ah, so skin to skin isn't required. Touching through clothes counts if the intent is there.
Exactly. That through clothing language is very important. Again, it requires that intent to arouse or gratify sexual desire.
What are the penalties for indecency with the child?
It depends on the conduct. If it involves the sexual contact part, touching, it's a second degree felony.
Okay.
If it involves the exposure part, it's a third degree felony.
Are there any defenses allowed here?
There are very limited affirmative defenses. For example, if the actor wasn't much older than the victim, not more than 3 years, they were opposite sexes, no force was used, and the actor isn't a registered sex offender. Or if the actor was legally married to the child at the time. Very specific circumstances.
Got it. Narrow defenses.
Mm.
Next up, sexual assault of a child. This is under the main sexual assault statute, 22.011, but specifically subsection A2.
Right. This mirrors the adult sexual assault elements, intentional or knowing penetration without consent. But the victim is specifically defined as a child.
You meaning younger than 17?
Correct. Younger than 17. And again, regardless of whether the actor knows the age of the child, it covers those same types of penetration or causing intimate contact we discussed earlier.
And the penalty for sexual assault of a child.
It's a second degree felony. Similar to adult sexual assault, but the victim's age is the defining factor. There's also that limited medical care defense and affirmative defenses related to marriage or age proximity, like the Romeo and Juliet defense, but with strict conditions about age difference, consent, and no prior record.
Okay. Now, logically, we move to aggravated sexual assault of a child. That's under 22.021A2. This sounds incredibly serious.
It is. This elevates the crime significantly based purely on the extreme youth of the victim. A sexual assault becomes aggravated sexual assault of a child if the victim is younger than 14 years of age.
Younger than 14, that's the trigger.
Yes. And again, regardless of whether the actor knows the victim's age, the law presumes extreme vulnerability and inability to consent below that age.
And the penalty. has to be high.
First-degree felony, same level as aggravated sexual assault of an adult.
Now, our source mentioned something called super aggravated sexual assault. What's that about? It involves even higher minimum sentences.
That's right. It's not an official legal term, but it refers to provisions within 22.021 that mandate a significantly longer minimum prison sentence, 25 years minimum, under two specific scenarios involving very young children.
Okay, what are those scenarios?
First, if the victim of the aggravated sexual assault is younger than 6 years old, that triggers the 25-year minimum.
Younger than six. Unbelievably vulnerable.
Exactly. The second scenario is if the victim is younger than 14 and the assault includes one of those other aggravating factors we discussed for adults causing serious bodily injury, using a deadly weapon, acting in concert, etc.
So under 14 PLUS, another aggravating factor also triggers the 25-year minimum.
Correct. For your exam, definitely flag these enhanced minimums. They show the extreme gravity the law places on assaulting the very youngest or doing so with additional violence or cruelty.
That's intense. Okay, let's talk about ongoing abuse patterns. Continuous sexual abuse of young child or disabled individual, Penal Code 21.02.
Right. This statute addresses situations where an offender engages in a pattern of abuse over time, which can be hard to prosecute as individual incidents.
What are the elements here?
The actor must be 17 or older. They have to commit two or more separate acts of sexual abuse during a period that lasts 30 days or more. It doesn't have to be 30 consecutive days, just spanning that time frame.
Okay, 17 plus manual, two or more acts over 30 plus days. And who are the victims?
At the time of each act, the victim must be either a child younger than 14, again, regardless of the actor knowing their age, or a disabled individual. It can be one victim multiple times or multiple victims, as long as the criteria are met for each act.
What counts as an act of sexual abuse for this law? Is it specific?
Yes. The statute lists specific, serious underlying offenses. Things like aggravated kidnapping with sexual intent, indecency with a child, contact, not just exposure, sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault, burglary with intent to commit one of these, sexual performance by a child, trafficking, compelling prostitution, basically a list of severe sexual crimes.
So it's repeated commission of these serious underlying offenses.
Exactly. And there is a really unique aspect regarding jury decisions here.
What's that? This is important for understanding how these cases work.
For conviction under continuous sexual abuse, the jury does not have to agree unanimously on the specific dates or even specific acts committed.
Really? How does that work?
They just have to agree unanimously that the defendant committed two or more qualifying acts during a period of 30 days or more. This is huge because it allows prosecution even if a victim, especially a young child, can't recall the exact details or dates of each incident in a long pattern of abuse. It focuses on the continuous nature of the harm.
That's a powerful tool against serial abusers. What's the penalty level?
It's a first-degree felony, but with a specific punishment range. Life imprisonment, or 25 to 99 years. That 25-year minimum underscores the seriousness.
Okay. Now, what about people who witness abuse but don't intervene? Failure to stop or report aggravated sexual assault of child, Penal Code 38.17.
This targets bystanders under very specific grave circumstances. It applies to someone who doesn't have a pre-existing legal duty to care for the child, like a parent or teacher would.
So a regular citizen, basically.
Right. They have to actually observe the commission or attempted commission of either continuous sexual abuse, that pattern offense, or aggravated sexual assault of a child under 14.
They have to see it happening.
Yes, and a reasonable person in their shoes would believe the offense was happening or about to happen. Then they have to fail to assist the child or immediately report it to law enforcement.
Is there a safety consideration?
Crucially, yes. The law only applies if the person could have assisted or reported without putting themselves in danger of serious bodily injury or death. That's a critical qualifier. You're not required to be a hero if it risks your life.
Okay. And the penalty for this failure to act?
It's a Class A misdemeanor.
All right. Let's shift to a specific context. Schools. Improper relationship between educator and student. Penal Code 21.12.
This statute targets the abuse of trust inherent in the educator-student relationship. It applies to employees of public or private primary or secondary schools.
What conduct does it cover?
It covers several scenarios. An employee engaging in sexual contact, intercourse, or deviate sexual intercourse with a student enrolled at their own school.
Okay, own school.
Or if the employee holds certain specific positions, like teacher, counselor, coach, admin, regardless of certification, engaging in those same acts with someone they know as a student at another primary secondary school, or even a participant in a school-sponsored activity where students are the main participants.
So it extends beyond just their own students in some cases.
Yes, for certain roles. And it also explicitly includes online solicitation, which we'll define later, with any of these students, regardless of the student's age.
And the penalty?
It's a second-degree felony. There are narrow affirmative defenses, like if they were married or if the relationship started before the person became an employee and they're close in age. It's also stackable, meaning other charges might apply too.
The source also mentioned privacy protections here.
Right. The student victim's name is confidential and cannot be released publicly. The accused employee's name generally can't be released to the public until they are indicted, though there are exceptions for reporting to education agencies or for investigation purposes. It tries to balance privacy and public safety.
Okay, let's move fully into the digital world now with online solicitation of a minor, Penal Code 33.0621. This seems incredibly relevant today.
Highly relevant. Peace officers deal with this constantly. The law targets adults preying on children online. It mainly covers two things.
What's the first?
An actor who is 17 or older, acting with the intent to commit a serious sex offense, like continuous SA, indecency, sexual assault, intentionally communicates in a sexually explicit manner with a minor online, or distributes sexually explicit material to a minor online.
Okay, sexually explicit communication or material with an intent to commit another crime. What's the second type?
The second is when someone knowingly solicits a minor online to meet up either with the actor or someone else with the intent that the minor will then engage in sexual conduct. This targets the grooming and luring aspect.
How does the law define minor and sexually explicit here?
A minor is someone younger than 17, or someone the actor believes is younger than 17. That believes part is key, covers situations where officers pose as minors online.
Right, sting operations.
Exactly. Sexually explicit refers to communications or materials relating to or describing sexual conduct, pulling from definitions used elsewhere in obscenity law.
What are the felony levels for online solicitation?
For the sexually explicit communication material part, it's a third-degree felony, but it jumps to a second-degree felony if the minor involved is, or is believed to be, younger than 14.
Okay, higher penalty for younger victims and the soliciting to meet part.
That's straight to a second-degree felony. There's also an enhancement if the offense happens during school hours and the actor knew the minor was enrolled.
Good to know. Next, sexual performance by a child. Penal Code 43.25. This deals with actually creating child exploitation material, right?
Yes, producing or facilitating performances involving child sexual exploitation. It covers anyone who knowingly employs, induces, or authorizes a child under 18 to engage in sexual conduct or sexual performance. It also applies to parents or guardians who consent.
And producing or directing it.
Also covered. Knowingly producing, directing, or even promoting a performance that includes sexual conduct by a child under 18. Sexual conduct is defined broadly: contact, actual or simulated intercourse, masturbation, lewd exhibition, etc.
What are the penalties?
For implying or inducing, it's a second-degree felony, but goes up to a first-degree felony if the victim is under 14.
Higher for younger victims again.
Always. For producing or promoting, it's a third-degree felony, rising to a second-degree felony if the victim is under 14. And remember, knowledge of the child's age is irrelevant.
Ignorance is no excuse. Are there defenses?
Very narrow ones. Being the child's spouse, a bona fide educational, medical, law enforcement purpose, or being not more than 2 years older than the child victim.
Okay, now here's another one dealing with technology and minors sharing material. Electronic transmission of certain visual material depicting minor, Penal Code 43.261. This one seems focused on minors themselves sharing explicit content.
Yes, this is often referred to as the sexting law, specifically addressing minors sharing explicit images or videos, often of themselves or peers. It applies to a minor, under 18, who intentionally or knowingly promotes to another minor visual material depicting a minor engaging in sexual conduct, or possesses such material electronically if they or another minor produced it.
And this is where that cutting-edge AI definition comes in again, right?
Exactly. This is crucial for you to grasp. The definition of visual material here explicitly includes computer-generated or AI-modified images if the depicted minor is recognizable and their image as a minor was used in creating or altering it.
So even AI-generated fakes depicting a real minor can fall under this if their image was the source.
That's the intent. It's the law trying desperately to keep pace with technology that can be used for exploitation, even if the depicted act never physically occurred, but uses a real child's likeness.
What's the penalty for minors doing this? It can't be as harsh as the adult offenses, can it?
Generally, no. It starts as a Class C misdemeanor, like a traffic ticket. However, it can be enhanced to a Class B or Class A misdemeanor, depending on intent, like harassment, or prior offenses under this section.
Are there defenses for minors here?
Yes, there are specific affirmative defenses. Like if the material only depicted the actor and another minor close in age in a dating relationship or a spouse, and it was only shared between them. There's also a defense for possessing it if you didn't solicit it, got it from another minor, and destroyed it reasonably quickly. It acknowledges the complexities of peer relationships and digital sharing among young people.
Okay, that makes sense. Last one in the child victim category. Employment harmful to children. Penal Code 43.251. This isn't direct abuse, but putting kids in risky environments.
Exactly. It prohibits employing, authorizing, or inducing a child to work in a sexually oriented commercial activity. Think nude studios, massage parlors focused on stimulation, or any business where the child is required or permitted to work nude or topless.
Now, child usually means under 17 or 18 in these laws. Is it different here?
Yes. This is a key distinction for your exam. For this specific offense, child means a person younger than 21 years of age.
Younger than 21? Wow, that extends protection quite a bit further.
It does. It recognizes the vulnerability of young adults, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, in these specific types of potentially exploitative employment settings.
And the penalties for employment, harmful to children.
It's a second-degree felony, but consistent with other laws, it jumps to a first-degree felony if the child involved is younger than 14, regardless of the actor's knowledge of their age.
Okay, that covers the child-specific offenses. Let's pivot to pornography and sexual recording offenses. Starting with invasive visual recording, Penal Code 21.15, commonly known as voyeurism or upskirting.
That's the kind of conduct it targets. It's committed if someone, without consent and with intent to invade privacy, records or transmits a visual image of another person's intimate area where they have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Intimate area being genitals, buttocks, female breast.
Right, naked or clothed. It also specifically covers recording or transmitting images of someone in a bathroom or changing room, regardless of whether intimate areas are visible, because the expectation of privacy there is absolute.
And promoting such images.
Also covered. Promoting a photo or recording obtained this way, knowing its character, is also an offense.
Is posting a sign saying recording in progress enough to get consent in a bathroom or changing room?
Absolutely not. The law is very clear. Signs are not sufficient to establish consent for recording in those highly private spaces. Actual consent is needed.
Good to know. What's the penalty?
State jail felony.
Okay, now for unlawful disclosure or promotion of intimate visual material, Penal Code 21.16. This is the revenge porn statute, and you mentioned earlier it had constitutional challenges.
Yes, this is a fascinating example for students of law. The original version faced challenges, leading to revisions in 2019 to make it more specific and hopefully constitutionally sound. It highlights that balancing act between protecting privacy and upholding free speech.
So under the revised law, what constitutes unlawful disclosure?
Okay, for disclosure to be illegal under this section, several things must be true. One, the disclosure must be without effective consent. Two, the actor must have the intent to harm the person depicted. Three, the actor knew or should have known the material was private. Four, the disclosure actually causes harm, emotional, financial, etc. Five, and the disclosure reveals the identity of the depicted person. All elements must be met.
And intent to harm is key there. What about the source of the image? Does it matter if the victim took it themselves or sent it voluntarily?
No, and this is critical. It is not a defense that the depicted person created the material, consented to its creation, or even sent it to the actor voluntarily at some point. Consent to create or share privately is not consent to public disclosure by someone else with intent to harm.
That's a vital distinction. What's the penalty?
Also a state jail felony. There are defenses for things like law enforcement activities, reporting crimes, or if it's just incidental depiction in a public place.
All right. Then there's unlawful electronic transmission of sexually explicit visual material.
Yeah.
21.19. This sounds like sending unsolicited explicit pictures. Cyber flashing.
Exactly what it targets. Sending unwanted explicit images electronically. It's committed if someone knowingly transmits visual material electronically that depicts sexual conduct, intimate parts, or even covered male genitals in a discernibly turgid state.
Okay.
And the key is, it was not sent at the request or with the express consent of the person who received it. It's the unsolicited nature that makes it illegal.
And the penalty for that.
Much lower than the others we've discussed. It's a Class C misdemeanor.
Interesting. Now let's get into obscenity law, 43.21 and 43.23. This always seems like a tricky area legally.
It is notoriously tricky, constantly balancing free expression against community standards. The core is the definition of obscene itself, which uses a three-part test based on Supreme Court precedent.
Miller test, right?
Yeah.
You could break that down simply.
Sure. For something to be legally obscene, basically all three of these must be true. One, does it appeal mainly to a morbid, unhealthy, or shameful interest in sex? Prurient interest for the average person in that community.
Okay. Unhealthy interest.
Two, does it depict or describe sexual acts or intimate areas in a way that is clearly deeply offensive, patently offensive, according to contemporary community standards?
Clearly offensive.
Three, and taken as a whole, does the material completely lack serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value? The SLIPS test. Does it have any redeeming social value?
So, prurient, patently offensive, and lacking serious value. All three.
All three must be met. Then the offense itself, 43.23, involves knowingly promoting, possessing with intent to promote, or producing obscene material or devices.
What are the penalties?
Usually a Class A misdemeanor or a state jail felony for wholesale promotion. But it gets significantly more serious, a second-degree felony, if the obscene material depicts obscene activities involving a child under 18 or an identifiable image of one. That child exploitation element drastically increases the penalty.
Got it. What about just displaying obscene material? Obscene display or distribution, 43.22.
This is a lesser offense. It covers intentionally or knowingly displaying or distributing obscene material where you're reckless about whether someone present will be offended or alarmed. Think displaying something obscene in a public place where people, including potentially children, might see it unexpectedly.
And the penalty for that?
Class C misdemeanor.
Okay. Now, similar but different. Sale, distribution, or display of harmful material to a minor, 43.24. This isn't obscene for adults, but harmful specifically for kids.
Exactly. It recognizes that material not legally obscene for adults might still be inappropriate and damaging for minors under 18. The definition of harmful material is similar to obscene, but judged from the perspective of minors and community standards for minors.
So, what's the offense?
It's committed if someone, knowing material is harmful and knowing the person is a minor, sells, distributes, or exhibits it to them, or displays it recklessly where a minor might be offended.
Is there a more serious version?
Yes. The most serious part is hiring, employing, or using a minor to help sell, distribute, or display this harmful material.
What are the penalties?
Selling or displaying is a Class A misdemeanor, but hiring or using the minor to do it, that's a third-degree felony.
Okay. Now, for the really heavy one in this category, possession or promotion of child pornography, 43.26.
Yes, this carries severe penalties, as it should. It targets knowingly or intentionally possessing, accessing with intent to view, or promoting visual material that depicts a child under 18 engaging in sexual conduct, knowing it depicts a child.
And this also explicitly includes the AI-generated material if a real child's image was used, right?
Absolutely. That same crucial definition applies here. Recognizable child, image used in creation adaptation, including computer-generated or AI material. The law is trying to cover all angles of this horrific exploitation.
The penalties here are tiered based on quantity, correct? This is complex.
Highly complex and severe. For possession, starts as a third-degree felony, less than 100 depictions, goes to second-degree felony, 100-499 depictions or one prior. Then first-degree felony, 500-plus depictions or two-plus priors or certain video evidence. Can even be life 25-99 years if the actor worked at a child facility or cared for the depicted child.
And there are further enhancements.
Yes. If the victim depicted is under 10, or if there's a prior conviction, the penalty category can increase, or the minimum sentence for a first-degree felony jumps to 15 years.
Wow. And for promotion?
Promotion is generally a second-degree felony, but becomes a first-degree felony with a prior promotion conviction. Defenses are extremely limited, bona fide professional purpose, or being close in age.
Okay. Finally, in this section, possession or promotion of lewd visual material depicting child, 43.262. How is this different from 43.26?
The key difference is the depiction. 43.26, child pornography, requires sexual conduct. This section, 43.262, targets material depicting the lewd exhibition of a child's genitals or pubic area. It might not show an explicit sex act, but it's still exploitative, appeals to the prurient interest, and lacks serious value.
So a slightly different type of image, but still illegal. Does it also cover AI?
Yes, same definition applies. Recognizable child image used in AI creation counts.
Penalties. And is consent a defense?
It's typically a state jail felony, escalating to third or second degree with priors under this, or 43.26. And crucially, child consent is not a defense. A child cannot legally consent to the creation of lewd visual material of themselves.
That's a critical point. Okay, let's move to our last major category, prostitution and related offenses. Starting with prostitution itself, 43.02.
The basic offense. Knowingly offering or agreeing to receive a fee from someone else to engage in sexual conduct. It's about being paid for the act.
What are the penalties?
Starts as a Class B misdemeanor, escalates with priors, Class A after one or two, state jail felony after three or more.
Is there a defense if the person was forced into it?
Yes, and this is important. It is an affirmative defense if the actor engaged in prostitution because they were a victim of human trafficking or compelling prostitution. Protects the exploited.
Good. Now, the other side. Solicitation of prostitution, 43.021, targeting the buyer.
Exactly. Knowingly offering or agreeing to pay a fee to someone for sexual conduct, demand side.
Penalties for solicitation.
State jail felony. Goes up to third degree felony with a prior solicitation conviction. And importantly, it jumps to a second degree felony if the person solicited is under 18 or believed represented to be, regardless of whether the solicitor knew their age. There's also an enhancement for doing it near a school.
So soliciting a minor is treated much more severely. Makes sense. What about promotion of prostitution, 43.03? This is the pimping statute.
Essentially, yes. It applies to someone acting other than as the prostitute themselves. They commit an offense if they knowingly receive money from the proceeds of someone else's prostitution or solicit someone to engage in prostitution with another person for money.
Penalties for promotion.
Third degree felony. Goes up to second degree felony with a prior promotion conviction. And skyrockets to a first degree felony if the person being promoted is under 18, regardless of the promoter knowing their age.
Okay, then aggravated promotion of prostitution, 43.04. What makes it aggravated?
The scale of the operation. This targets knowingly owning, investing in, financing, controlling, supervising, or managing a prostitution enterprise that uses two or more prostitutes. It's about organized crime.
And the penalty.
First degree felony.
Now the online versions. Online promotion, 43.031, and aggravated online promotion, 43.041.
These target the websites and platforms used to facilitate prostitution. Online promotion is owning or operating an interactive service with intent to promote prostitution. It's a third degree felony, rising to second degree with priors, or if a minor is involved.
And aggravated online promotion.
That's when the intent is to promote five or more prostitutes or facilitate five or more. Higher scale, higher penalties, generally second degree felony, rising to first degree with priors, or if two or more minors are involved.
Finally, compelling prostitution. 43.05. This sounds like the core of sex trafficking.
It absolutely is. Knowingly causing another person to commit prostitution. How? By force, threat, coercion, or fraud.
Okay. What if the victim is a child or disabled?
If the victim is under 18 or a disabled individual, the actor is guilty if they cause them to commit prostitution by any means, even without overt force or fraud. Again, regardless of knowing the age or disability.
Penalty for compelling prostitution.
First degree felony. And it's stackable with other offenses.
And you mentioned earlier the definition of coercion is really broad here. Can you remind us what that includes? It's important for recognizing trafficking.
Definitely. Coercion here isn't just physical. It includes things like destroying or confiscating identity documents, causing intoxication to mess with judgment, or withholding drugs or alcohol from someone who's dependent to control them. It highlights the manipulative tactics traffickers use. Officers need to look for these subtle signs.
That's incredibly important context. Okay, just one more specific offense. Sexual coercion, 21.18.
This covers threats made to get sexual favors or materials. It's when someone intentionally threatens to commit certain offenses like prostitution, obscenity, sexual assault, unlawful disclosure in order to get a benefit like intimate visual material, sexual conduct, or money for not committing the threatened offense.
So sexual blackmail, essentially.
Pretty much. It also covers threats of really serious crimes like homicide or kidnapping to obtain intimate material or sexual conduct, state jail felony, rising to third degree with a prior, and the threat can be communicated anyway, online, email, whatever.
Okay. Lastly, let's touch on sex offender registration, CCP Chapter 62. This is about what happens after conviction.
Right. It mandates that individuals convicted of certain reportable sex offenses register with local law enforcement, usually within 7 days of moving into an area. It's a monitoring system.
And what if they don't comply? Failure to comply, 62.102.
Failing to register as required is a felony itself. The level depends on the original registration requirement. State jail felony if the duty was for 10 years. Third degree felony if the duty is for life with yearly verification. Second degree felony if the duty is for life with 90-day verification for the highest risk offenders.
And penalties can increase with priors or fraud.
Yes. Prior failure to register convictions or using false ID info can bump the punishment up to the next higher felony degree. Linking compliance failure severity to the original risk level is key here for exam purposes.
Wow. We have covered an immense amount of legal territory today. From those crucial initial definitions of contact and intercourse, all the way through offenses against adults, the specific protections for children, the complexities of consent, digital crimes like online solicitation and revenge porn, obscenity, prostitution, and finally registration.
It really highlights the sheer breadth and the specificity of the penal code in this area. Mm. We've seen how definitions matter, how circumstances like age or weapon use change everything, how consent is defined broadly, and how penalties escalate based on harm and vulnerability.
For anyone listening who's studying for an exam, really internalizing these distinctions, the different felony degrees, the elements of each offense, the specific defenses, it's absolutely crucial.
It really is. It's not just about passing a test, though. It's about fundamentally understanding how the law tries to address these incredibly serious harms and protect individuals, especially the most vulnerable. That understanding is vital for anyone working within the justice system.
Absolutely. We've spent this whole deep dive looking at how the law meticulously defines intent, conduct, consent, visual material, all based on current understanding and technology. But here's something to chew on. How might the next wave of technology, things we maybe can't even fully imagine yet beyond today's AI, continue to challenge these definitions? Will laws written today adequately cover, say, fully immersive virtual reality assaults or exploitation using brain-computer interfaces or something else entirely?
That's a profound question. It points to the constant tension between static legal text and dynamic technological and social change. The law is always, in a sense, playing catch-up.
It seems like it requires constant vigilance, constant reevaluation and adaptation from lawmakers, courts, and law enforcement just to keep pace, doesn't it? Something definitely worth thinking about.